They were bumping along the 104, heading west, in Willie's one ton. Willie behind the wheel, Dave riding shotgun, Dave's son Sam sitting on a milk crate between them. They crossed the causeway in the late afternoon, and they were already past New Glasgow, which meant they were making good time. Willie said, "We could stop in Sackville, take the kid to Mel's for dinner." Dave said, "Or to the inn, we could take him to the Marshland, show him a little class." Dave winked at Sam. Willie was wearing a black Def Leppard t-shirt, ripped jeans, not exactly a paragon of class. Willie said, "Food's better at Mel's." Sam said, "Is it really called Sackville?" They were supposed to fly, Dave and Sam were. They'd flown down to help Margaret and Smith with fall chores, putting the windows up and the garden frames away. They had tickets to fly home. But Dave ran into Willie and Kerrigan's, and Willie said, "I'm driving if you want." It was early autumn, the loamy smell of leaves in the chilly air. "Leaving Tuesday," said Willie. Meant they could stay 2 days longer. Also meant Sam would miss a couple of days of school. "I'm okay with that," said Sam. So there they were. Sam on the milk crate, his eyes glued to the road, sliding into his father every time Willie took a corner too fast, which was most of the corners. The cab of the truck already filling up with empty takeout cups, used paper napkins, spare change, and Willie's maps. It was, in other words, perfect, or as perfect as any 22-hour road trip can be, working out just as Dave had hoped. As they rolled past the spider web towers of the old CBC shortwave service, Dave said, "We could go the long way, you know, through Maine." "Not crossing the border," said Willie. "Might be fun," said Dave. "Stop and see Big Al and Bangor." "Can't cross the border," said Willie. Willie jerking his head toward the back of the truck. "Can't risk it." Willie used to haul cable in the old days, a grunter, salt of the earth. But he wasn't a big man, and as the road cases got bigger and heavier and he got older, the work got too hard. Don't get me wrong. Willie could still scramble up into the rafters of any arena just like a monkey. Just everything got too heavy. He learned the light board from Freaky Bottoms. Got into pyro a couple of years later, early on in the pyro game. "I have stuff back there," said Willie. Meaning in the back of the truck. Dave glanced at his son. Sam was lost in a headphoned fog. He frowned at Willie. Willie laughed, shook his head, "Oh, not that kind of stuff." What Willie had back there were boxes of pyro left over from the tour he'd just finished. Well, not exactly the tour. "It's complicated," said Willie. They'd been up and down the eastern seaboard, the Carolinas, Virginia, Kentucky. "We stopped in this little town," said Willie, "back in the hills. There was a hardware store. You wouldn't have believed this place. Screen door with a little bell, a wood stove with a little bucket for chew. Guy lived over the store, just him and his gimped up dog. And he showed Willie around. Willie loves that sort of thing. And there were boxes of stuff, boxes of it, from the 40s and 50s. "What kind of stuff?" said Dave. "Pyro," said Willie. "Never seen anything like it. From a carnival or something. Big stuff, show stuff." The problem was, it was sort of past its due date. "But only by a decade or two," said Willie. Then he said, "I could lose my license." He didn't seem too worried about it. One hand resting on top of the steering wheel, the other riding the air currents out the window. "But I'm not risking the border again." They stopped in Sackville. Willie pulled into the gas station by the highway. Willie said, "I'm going to gas up before dinner." Then they drove into town and ate at Mel's. Chicken sandwiches on sliced white, real chicken, real fries, real shakes. "This is good," said Sam. Back on the highway, back on the road, Dave undid his sneakers and put his socked feet up on the dash. He glanced at Sam. Sam was fiddling with a radio. Sam said, "I'm trying to find some good music." Dave looked over at Willie, who had been humming along to the radio. Willie shrugged and smiled. Willie was cool. Dave pressed his face against the side window of the truck and gazed out into the dusk. He hadn't thought of firecrackers for years. They were a huge deal in Big Narrows when Dave was a kid. Not the fancy ones, not Roman candles and things like that. The little red ones. The ones that looked like dynamite. You light the fuse and they explode and nothing else. No stars, no sparkles, just a flash and a good old utilitarian boy-like bang. You got them at McDonnell's. McDonnell's General Store. They came every autumn. They were like apples. You dreamed of them all summer, and they came in the fall. So when fall came, boys watched over McDonnell's the same way they watched over the quarry pond for signs of ice. "Are they here yet, Mr. McDonnell? When are they coming, Mr. McDonnell?" They came all the way from China, from the port city of Macau, and they came by boat in a New York City, or so Mr. McDonnell said. "Slow boat from China, boys. We have to be patient." No one, or no boy anyway, ever suspected that Mr. McDonnell might have stock left over from the previous season in his basement. Or would have understood, had they figured it out, what a favor he was doing for them by making them wait. There is abundance in scarcity. And the day the firecrackers finally appeared, there was an abundance of joy. The thought of it made Dave smile. The day they finally appeared was as good as Christmas morning. Each package, they only cost a nickel or maybe a dime, was about the size of a deck of cards, all crisp, waxy, and red. Red inside and out. Each cracker was not only dynamite red itself, the package came wrapped in red paper, firecracker paper. There was nothing like it anywhere. Crispy, like tissue paper gone stale. Anchor brand, alligator brand, black cat, black bat, black jack, black widow. The instructions printed at the bottom of the label in English were identical on each pack. Lay on ground, light fuse, and move away. Yeah, sure. The little ones, lady fingers they called them, were maybe half an inch long, and boys like Johnny Flowers actually held them in their hands when they went off. Dave had seen this with his own eyes, but had never had the guts to try it himself. Cherry bombs were the biggest, 2 inches long, 2 feet loud, guaranteed to blow the head off a Barbie doll if you taped enough of them to a Barbie doll's neck. The best, like so much in life, were the ones in the middle, the one-inchers, the inch-and-a-halves. They came in packs of 12, or sometimes 16s, and the wicks were made of gray paper and were woven together. So they came in strings, designed for the Chinese practice of letting off the whole string at once for a celebratory round of pop, 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 pops. No boy in the Narrows would do that. For boys who counted their money by the penny, that would have been the most monstrous frivolity, a waste of explosive proportions. Mostly the firecrackers were set off at night. For what could be better. If you are between the ages of 8 and 16, the prime firecracker demographic, what could be better than to be out after dark with a smoldering string and a pocket full of black powder? Dave said, "What was that string called?" Sam shifted on his milk crate and said, "What?" Dave said, "I was just thinking. We used to use string to light firecrackers. I can't remember what we called it." Sam said, "I have no idea what you're talking about." "Punk," said Dave. "We called it punk, and I'm talking about firecrackers. They were like a storm in a tube. They were both thunder and lightning. And the boys lit them and threw them as if they were born for stormy nights." Billy had this idea you could take a bunch of packs and break the sticks open and collect the powder and pack it into a pipe and make a rocket and launch a hamster into space. He had the hamster. And he built the capsule. He took his grandfather's old mailbox and covered it in tinfoil. They spent a weekend training the hamster, getting it ready for the rigors of re-entry by sealing him in the capsule and lowering it off the bridge. But Billy could never convince enough kids to pool enough powder to pack the 6-inch copper pipe that he had stolen from his father's woodshed. So that never went any further than talk. Of course, firecrackers were dropped down chimneys by older boys. But mostly, they were just lit and chucked in the air. Mostly, it was just a Friday night in October, three boys in sneakers and windbreakers. There were accidents, of course. Kids were burned every year, but no one was burned seriously. No one lost an eye or any of those things you read about. And when October came, even 8-year-olds were allowed out at night, unsupervised, with a pack of matches, a piece of string, and their pockets full of mischief. That was the way it was back then. Everyone did it, and everyone knew what they were up to. How could you not? Nearly every night in October, the town was punctuated by the rat-a-tat-tat of boys. "Dad?" Sam was poking him. "Dad, Willie said you want to stop." "What? Do you want to stop?" Dave glanced at Sam. His son had given up on the radio. He was headphoned and glowing. It made Dave sad to think that Sam wouldn't have firecracker memories. Closest Sam had ever come to the explosives racket was the summer afternoon David found him sitting on the sidewalk with a small hammer and a roll of caps, sitting there banging out little sparks. Someone had brought the caps from the States, maybe even Willie. "Dad," said Sam again, "do you want to stop?" Dave looked over at Willie. Willie was grinning. They were somewhere past Moncton, away still to Fredericton. There's a stretch of highway there where there's not a lot going on. There's a little town with a service center, and a little further on, a chip wagon and a farm stand and a motel, and then about 5 minutes further, on the right-hand side, if you're heading for Fredericton, there's an old quarry. "Remember?" said Willie. When Dave spotted the quarry road, he said, "There!" And Willie pulled in. They drove to the end of the road, and they got out. Sam said, "What's going on?" Willie said, "It's showtime, son." Sam helped Willie and his father unload the truck. 7 boxes in all, each one with a hand-painted label that looked like a circus poster. Dave put his hand on Sam's shoulder and said, "You sit over there." And Sam sat down on the lip of the quarry. Willie, on his knees, opening boxes and pulling stuff out, said, "This stuff is amazing. It's amazing." Dave said, "Be careful." And Willie smiled his gap-toothed smile and said, "As always, bro." And then he stood and called to Sam, "You ready, son?" And Sam shrugged, and Willie bent over, and he lit the first one. For a moment, there was nothing. Dave said nothing, and he took a step towards it. Willie grabbed him by the shoulder, pulled him back. Willie said, "Patience, brother, patience." And neither of them moved. And suddenly there was a whiz and a silver flare and then an explosion of indigo. And the entire sky, or all of the sky they could see from the quarry floor, was full of indigo diamonds. And Willie said, "Oh, yeah." And he lit another, and then another. The explosions ricocheted off the quarry walls and flashed and flowered on the rocks, turning everything blue and red and yellow, but just for an instant, for a flash. "Beautiful," said Willie again. "It's beautiful. Stars and flowers and diamonds. The sky telescoping in and out." After 20 minutes or so, Dave noticed the flicker of headlights along the quarry lip. A car had pulled off the highway and was bouncing down the gravel road. 5 minutes later, he saw another, and then another. Before long, there were maybe 15 or 20 lining the shoulder of the quarry. And Dave could make out the silhouettes of people standing there, watching. Willie said, "Golden orbs of Pluto's fire." And golden orbs flew up into the night. And in the light of the orbs, Dave saw upturned faces and pointing fingers. A dad with a child hoisted on his shoulders. A young couple, their arms around each other, their heads together but tilted back. He saw them in the flash, and then he didn't. Willie said, "Waterfall of the fire cauldron." And Dave stopped watching the sky and began watching the people instead, some sitting, some leaning on their cars. And then he said to Willie, "Your show." And he climbed back up the hill, and he found Sam and sat on the ground beside him. "This is awesome," said Sam. "This is the best night of my life." And Dave put his arm on Sam's shoulders. And there was a whoosh and a flare. And Dave saw his son's face, this time in the golden glow. And he thought, this is how he would like to remember his son. When Sam grew up and left home and he wanted to remember him, he wanted to remember him just like this. Sitting there on the edge of the quarry in the middle of the night, his head back, his eyes wide open, and a smile on his face. The darkness around them, but also the whiz-bang joy of explosion and the smell of the smoke, the oohs and the ahs, and now, from the people all around, the applause.